And a light west wind. Tonight, mostly cloudy, the low 55. The wind will be light and out of the northwest. Early after midnight, the wind will be from the east. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and warmer with a high of 78. The wind out of the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. The low 62. The wind from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Look for a high in the mid-70s. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Expect a low in the mid-60s. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 80s. Sunday night and Monday, mostly cloudy. We'll see a low Sunday night in the mid-60s and a high Monday in the low 80s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the upper 50s, and they ranged into the upper 60s. Most locations reporting cloudiness. At Rockford, it was 66 degrees at the top of the hour. At O'Hare and at Bloomington, 65. 68 at Mattoon. Carbondale reported 66 degrees at noon. South Bend, 58. Lafayette, 68. And in Indianapolis and Terre Haute, 67 degrees. Willard Airport reported a partly sunny sky at the top of the hour. The temperature, 66. The dew point, 52. The relative humidity, 59%. The wind, calm. The barometric pressure, 30.04, and steady. And at 12:39, it's 69 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. About 14 million Americans are unemployed and looking for work. Millions more are facing foreclosure. Some of these Americans have kids in college, and those college students are learning how to live on a tight budget. NPR's Chris Arnold visited a college in Maine and has this report.
Students are loading up their lunch trays at the University of New England. The campus is right on the bank of the Saco River, where it empties into the Atlantic Ocean. We met up here with John Langevin, who's an assistant dean and school psychologist.
This really is kind of a picture-perfect New England campus, you know.
I go to work every day at the beach.
The problem is it's like 20 degrees.
It's only 20 degrees, and the water is so cold, but it is a beautiful spot.
Langevin says, like many colleges, it might look like a country club, but behind the scenes, many more young people here are under a lot of financial strain. He sees that as a mental health counselor.
We're seeing a higher percentage of students in counseling services than we ever have before.
Langevin says a National Association of College Counselors has recently come out with a survey, and it shows a change in recent years.
About 70% report that the stress levels are higher and the severity of cases that they're seeing is higher than ever before.
Langevin says going to college always poses challenges for young people, but now there's sometimes the added stress of a parent back home who's lost a job or the family's house has been foreclosed on, and that makes students very aware of how much money they're spending at college.
I think, honestly, it kind of makes you a little boring.
Sydney Kaiser is a student who's majoring in nursing. Her mother's been between jobs and struggling to avoid foreclosure for most of the time that she's been in school. So, needless to say, money is very tight.
You know, friends saying, hey, you want to go to the movies after class? You know, want to go out to lunch today? I mean, you know, I'm still watching, you know, everything I spend, so you become a planner.
But Kaiser says there's a deeper difference between her and some of her fellow students whose families don't have any money problems. She says she has to actually do the math on whether she thinks the money she's borrowing to go to school is really worth it and how long it's going to take her to pay it back.
It definitely puts the pressure on. You know, you stress out. It's not, each test isn't just about a grade. It's about dollars and cents. You know, you pass and, you know, maybe you get a shot at life, you know. It's very intense. No wild and crazy college days. It's, you're thinking about, okay, what career can get me what kind of income and how fast can I get started?
And Kaiser has more classmates than you might think who are in pretty much the same boat. Katie Leary is 20 years old and is also a nursing major.
So I was raised in a single-parent household, and my mom actually just 2 months ago 3 months ago, lost her job. She was laid off, and so obviously that raises some issues with schooling, and both my sister and I were in college, so there's two of us in college. So we have to find a way to make that happen.
Counselors here say sometimes students just disappear and go home when their family runs into financial problems. So the university is trying to do more to help them explore all of their options before they end up dropping out. Danielle Rippage is the president of the University of New England.
We've actually added 4 additional staff people to our financial aid office over the past year and a half because we really saw this increase in students needing more help with it.
Rippage says the school is also expanding the number of work, study, and campus jobs available to students. And the university is doing something else that's kind of unexpected. It's offering free bicycles and Zipcar use to students who don't bring a car to school, and that saves them money. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
While so many people are struggling to make ends meet, it's hard to sympathize with professional athletes laid low by the high life. NPR's Mike Pesca has that story.
It kind of seems impossible that an athlete making $5, $10, or in one case $90 million over a career could lose all his money. Well, you know who else thinks it's impossible? The athletes themselves.
They see this like infinite, like it doesn't end and you can't spend it all. But if you get $5 million a year, by the time you're done paying your agent and taxes, you have $2 million left to spend. That goes very quickly.
Scott Berkue has handled the finances of professional baseball and basketball players, most famously Kenny Anderson, the former point guard who earned over $60 million during his 14 years in the NBA, yet declared bankruptcy the year his career ended. Berkue says that Anderson realized his spending couldn't be sustained, and player and accountant planned for the inevitable.
I personally took some steps to protect him by setting up some trust. And for example, he owned a house, so I put it into a trust so that escaped bankruptcy because it was done probably 3 or 4 years before he was going through bankruptcy.
Some people just can't help spending. Usually this trait prevents them from acquiring fortunes in the first place. In general, the people in our society who make a lot of money need to know something about money. Not athletes and entertainers, however. The leagues are aware of this. They conduct financial seminars for all rookies, which often come during days of lectures on sexual harassment, drug policy, and a lot of other topics which may not prompt newly minted 20-year-old millionaires to take careful notes.
An issue that they don't understand and it's not communicated right.
Ed Butowski is the managing partner of Chapwood Capital Investment Management. He advises NBA All-Star Kevin Durant, 15-year baseball veteran Torrey Hunter, and many others. Everyone tells the athletes, be smart, don't overspend, and invest. But what happens, Butowski says, is that the stars of the sporting world model their behavior on the stars of the business world.
So what these athletes do is they look around at the front row, and they say, I want to be like the front row guys.
A terrible choice, says Butowski. The guys with front row seats, even owners of NBA teams, have often made their money through concentration in a single field. So athletes say, I want to own car washes, I want a clothing line, or some other kind of private, hard-to-liquidate business, which Butowski says should make up no more than 5% of an athlete's portfolio after $3 million is in the bank. In fact, Butowski says everyone's prime example of an athlete-turned-successful businessman is all wrong.
Magic Johnson is always brought up as somebody who did it right, and quite frankly, Magic Johnson didn't do it right. Magic Johnson caught lightning in a bottle.
Butowski conducts boot camps for any player who wants to attend. He gives them special calculators, which demonstrate when a free-spending athlete will run out of money. And he does it all for free. He won't even accept gifts of tickets. Ed Butowski is the Mother Teresa meets Susie Orman for some of the richest, most envied people on the planet. They need it, he says, and he's happy to give. With one exception, says the New York-born financial advisor.
The team that I despise the most are the Red Sox, and I will not work with anyone who plays for them.
Kevin Youkilis, be so advised. Mike Pesca, NPR News, New York.
And next, a story about a PR stunt. Frito-Lay recently mounted a kitchen on a marquee in the middle of New York's Times Square. The company was trying to send the message that Fritos, Cheetos, and Doritos are healthy. More from NPR's Netta Ulaby.
The marquee of the Hard Rock Hotel drips with Art Nouveau detail, and it's outlined in red neon.
Frito-Lay has rigged up a tiny temporary test kitchen right in the middle. This open-air, second-story perch puts Frito-Lay's executive chef at eye level with tourists chugging past on double-decker buses.
I like to stand here and throw bags of chips at them. No, for them.
Stephen Khalil recently spent a week on his feet in this cramped pop-up kitchen, making recipes promoting the natural wholesomeness of Frito-Lay products.
We're not hiding anything. We're pulling back the curtains. We're letting everybody see the flavor kitchen.
Meaning a stovetop, an oven, and celebrities. Top chefs Padma Lakshmi appeared to make a promotional video in the rain.
I have a leaky tent here in Times Square.
Frito-Lay is trying to promote its claim that fully half of its products are all natural. No artificial colors, flavors, or things you can't pronounce. Frito-Lay's PR director, Chris Kuchenmeister, swears this tiny kitchen is not unlike visiting the company's 6,000-square-foot test kitchen in Plano, Texas.
What we're hearing is consumers are interested more than ever in where their food is coming from and how their food is created. And we thought, why not bring that process to life for consumers in a place that brings the flavors of America together, and Times Square seemed like a perfect fit for that.
Free chips from Frito-Lay! The all-natural ingredients, free chips from Frito-Lay!
Still, this scene, with guys dressed as chefs on the street handing out snacks, does not really evoke the trend-setting, green market, field-to-city scene that's become a national phenomenon.
Like, here we have a great example. It's tomato and basil. Tomato and basil.
The week-long promotion involved bringing people off the street to try recipes while cameras beamed it on the giant screens flanking Times Square and on Facebook, where they looped in people playing Farmville. Frito-Lay's PR director, Chris Kuchenmeister, says this strategy is more meaningful than a regular commercial.
The flavor kitchen in Times Square is the next expression of how we approach our consumers and really look at developing that dialogue and that relationship with them that is a long-term commitment rather than just a one-way marketing message.
The company's banking that personal interactions with thousands of consumers in Times Square will pay off. And so far, the measurables are not too shabby. During the Times Square promotion, Frito-Lay added 1.5 million fans to its Facebook page, setting a Guinness Book of World Records for the most within 24 hours. Netta Ulibi, NPR News.
The bike rodeo is coming to town. Round up your kids and bike them on down to the Urbana Market at the Square, Saturday, May 21st at 9 a.m. You and your kids will practice basic bike safety skills. Helmets are just $10. This free family event is brought to you by CU Safe Routes to School, CUMTD, and Illinois Public Media. For more information, visit willconnect.org/events.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 19th of May, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist Jodi Picoult, born in Nesconset on Long Island, 1966, author of 18 novels, most recently Sing.